It's like free as in goldfish.
Hey, Ben.
Hey, Matt.
We should really not be talking over the intro so that I edited it out, should we? We should be more professional about this thing.
I don't know.
It's better than me singing, I suppose.
It can be a good source of outtakes.
That's very true. That's very true. It gives me like the cold opens and cold closes and stuff, which is worthwhile.
We'll do the cold open at the open. That'll be a new interesting way to do it.
Way to actually just launch into one and then go, oh, I suppose we should press the button to make the theme music play now. I was actually thinking about this the other day. I was thinking about arranging the theme music for clarinet, cello, and drums so that me and my kids could play it together. And it would be kind of a cool thing. But, you know, given that they think everything I do is the most terrible thing, boring thing to do, I don't imagine that will go through. But no. Anyway, that's not what we're here to talk about today. Although we could. Music is fun.
We can talk about anything that we want.
We could.
That's the amazing thing about this podcast. No one can stop us.
No one can. That's very true. What power we have.
Mm-hmm. Right.
What power we have. But you and I already discussed. We went out with friends last night. And on the walk to the bar where we met our friends, you suggested this topic. And we had a little pre-game. And so I think we should talk about it. And that topic is... about hands.
Hands.
And you've spoken about this. This is one of your little, you're fond of aphorisms and little, like, cute sayings. And do you want to even say? Go on. What is the one that we're talking about?
The one that we're going to talk about today is dirty hands are right. And this comes from a internet deal. This is before memes, I feel like.
I mean, memes in their culturally appropriated, as opposed to the scientific sort of Richard Dawkins-ish memes that, okay.
Yes. The Cult of Dunn. So this was like a set of ideas invented by, I was going to say a guy, I don't know if they're a guy, a person named Bree Pettis. And he basically like sat down one day and came up with approximately 10 rules for getting things done, and it took him like 25 minutes, and he's like, I'm just gonna knock this out, and this is gonna be my rules. And I actually have, you can
I was gonna say, there's a
you can
there's
see
a
the poster
I can't quite because the I know that it's there from having been to your house, but like, there is the Dunn Manifesto, right? Is that what it says?
Yes,
it's a bit blurry.
Manifesto. And the Dunn Manifesto is the manifesto of the Cult of Dunn. And this was introduced to me by a friend of mine back in, 2008, something like that. And it's like the thing that I love about it, it literally was created in like 20 minutes.
Right.
It's not super well thought out.
Right.
But that's kind of the point.
Because it's just done now.
It's about getting things done, right? It doesn't have to be super well thought out. It just needs to be done. And then you can move on from it, and you can learn from it, and you can improve it, and you can do things with it. But if you don't ever finish it, then you can't do those things, or it's harder to do those things. And so you can Google this, dear listener, if you want, the Cult of Dunn, the Dunn Manifesto. You will find it. But one of the things in the Cult of Dunn is, and I'm going to try to quote this directly from the Cult of Dunn, the manifesto. People without dirty hands are wrong. Doing something makes you right. And
that's actually interesting because that's not how you've said it to me before.
Yeah. Yeah. I've said it as dirty hands are right. That's the shorter version of it.
Right. But there's a subtle difference.
There is.
Yes.
So I wanted to talk about this because I had repeated this many times since learning it, and I have thought about it. And I think my thinking on this has become more nuanced. Perhaps like the original quote, it was more nuanced. And it has shifted a little bit because I think if you want to apply this in an effective and useful way, you need to really understand what it means to have dirty hands. Because being able to kind of walk around and be like, dirty hands are right, is a great way to make a lot of mistakes very quickly. If you... are not careful about sort of wielding the power of dirty hands.
Got it. So should we just talk about, first of all, that simplified version that you sped, which is Dirty Hands Are Right. And like, forgive me for simplifying further, but what this essentially says is like, if somebody's in the middle of doing something and they say, we should do it this way, and you aren't in the middle of doing it, trust them. They're probably the right person to be doing it, right? You know, you don't throw stuff in from the peanut gallery just because you might have an opinion. Don't bike shed. Unless you're doing it yourself, you have no horse in this race. Shut up.
Yes.
And let them get on with it. Right.
Exactly right.
And that's how I've taken it to be from all the things. And from that point of view, I understand why it gets things done, because it means that you don't have this constant interruption from other people saying, have you thought about doing this? And you're like, no, I haven't. And I'm not going to. I chose to do it this way, and I will therefore get this thing done. And then we will move on to something else. Right. So that makes a lot of sense to me. And obviously, I mean, everyone can think of reasons why this isn't always true, but it is not a bad first approximation to, in a startup kind of environment like we have been for a while, let's just, hey, if you're interested in doing it and you're already doing it, you keep on trucking and we'll trust you to get on with it.
Absolutely right. And if your goal is to get things done, this is very effective, right? If your goal is to be SOX 2 compliant, this is maybe not the approach you want to use. But if your goal is to get things done, this is very effective, right? And I think that you've distilled the core of it down very well in that summary. So I think it's actually more interesting. So let's just take that and be like, all right, that's useful. That's a thing. You can do that. That's a good way to think about stuff. The interesting part of this is, I think, talking about the exceptions. When are dirty hands wrong?
When you're preparing food.
When you're preparing food is a great example of when dirty hands are wrong. You're in the kitchen, you know, you just took the trash out and you're like, I'm going to cut up this chicken anyway.
That's right. Yeah. That's one. Okay. It's a slightly silly way, but it is.
Yeah. And you know, like the, you know, SOX 2 compliant thing is definitely like, yeah, you can get things done and then you're not going to be compliant with that. But like, I think the one of the more important nuances that I have added into this, especially in like the last 5 years, is understanding the distinction between the hands that are currently dirty in that they are building a thing, and the hands of the people who will be expected to support that thing. And if those are not the same hands, then that is a situation in which dirty hands can be wrong.
Interesting. So reading that back to you, that is, the sort of typical support engineer versus productionization engineer. And like, say, at Google, you know, you have I can't even think what they're called now, but SREs who are supporting it. And at one stage, way back in the time, it was like engineers threw it over the fence and the SREs just had to deal with the fires and they pushed back. And eventually it was like, no, before you can throw this at me, the SRE has to sign off on it. And or you also get to go on the pager duty rotation for that thing so that everybody learns. And then hopefully one distills a correctness out of that process. But just because, hey, I'm the guy who wrote it, I'm right. Yeah, that doesn't follow when it's like, but I'm also not the person who's going to be woken up at 4 a.m. when the memory leak finally actually crashes the machine.
Right. It's like the problem with that transition of like, I'm going to build something with dirty hands and then I'm going to take my filthy, dirty hands and use them to hand this thing to you is just to mix some metaphors here.
This is great. I love it.
It's like free as in goldfish. Right? Like,
I've never heard that before. Is that yours?
No, I got that from somewhere. I forget
free
where.
Free as in goldfish, yeah. Yes. Free as in puppy, you know.
Right,
here you go.
Exactly. Yes.
This is yours now, but it comes with massive amount of responsibility.
Right, right. I've given you this thing, and really it's like a curse, right?
Yeah.
Like now you are responsible for this, and all of my mistakes have become your mistakes, which is great for me and terrible for you.
Absolutely, right? Awful for you. Yes.
And so I think like the main way to avoid this organizationally is just don't do that. Don't let engineers absolve themselves of their own sins by passing software unsupported off onto other people, right? So I personally think I'm gonna couch this a little bit more. I was going to say something else, but I'm going to couch this a little bit more. I'm going to say, I don't understand how to apply the software engineering techniques that I know and I've been successful with to that kind of SRE model, right? Where you have software engineers that build software and then they hand it off to SREs and the SREs support them. And because of that, the SREs need to have a lot of oversight over what the software engineers are doing. You can certainly build software that way. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying, I don't know how to take all of the useful, effective techniques that I have and fit it into that model.
Right.
Because they all just completely fall over when you're like, yeah, I'm just going to build a thing and then I'm going to hand it off to these people and then I'm going to go on to my next project and I'm never going to have to worry about it again. Right. Like, so I think one way to avoid this failure of dirty hands are right and allow dirty hands to be right is to just don't let people do that. Or maybe more realistically, don't structure your organization to do that on purpose.
Right.
Right. Because I think you're gonna suffer if you do that. Or at least you will not be able to get things done in this way. And it's a useful way to get things done.
It is. As I say, it doesn't necessarily, yeah. Perhaps we should talk about the original phrasing in a second, but I can think of another example where dirty hands maybe not always right. Now I'm definitely trying this on, thinking this through. Folks who are inexperienced, either at the particular task at hand or at software engineering in general. And I can't help but feel like this is maybe just I'm a grumpy old man who wants to say everyone needs to do it, these young whippersnappers.
As previously stated, this is our podcast and we get to say whatever we want.
I know. But it doesn't come without, you know, repercussions. I like to be thoughtful about these things, as you are as well.
Yeah.
So I don't want to say anything that's particular, but so I'm with that in mind. It is the case that you can have a junior developer or somebody who isn't a software engineer develop something, and you look at it as a seasoned engineer or somebody with more domain experience and go, wow, you've really made that hard on yourself. And at that point, those dirty hands that are like, well, we've just done it this way, this is where we are now. It's hard to argue that they're right. I mean, they're right in as much as they've got something done. Presumably they maybe have, and maybe that's how you get out of this. Maybe it's the wiggle words here. It's like, well, they're done. V1 is done. And now we need to think about this again as a V2.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, maybe
discuss. Yeah. What do you think?
Right. No. So I think that point is absolutely correct. Is that, anytime that you put someone in a situation where they're not capable of doing the task that you've given to them, you need to think about how you're going to make it possible for them to succeed, right? So if you want to operate an organization and you want to have this mantra where it's like, we're going to get things done, we're going to say dirty hands are right, then if you're going to give someone a task that they may not be capable of doing, then you need to find a way to support them that cannot be the thing that we were just talking about where you've got some seasoned engineers like, did you think about this? Have you considered this? Have you bike shedded this?
Yeah.
And they sort of like do this flyby advice.
Like either at the very end of a pull request that's like already, you know, you've designed a system and got it like all wrong. Or as you say, flyby, literally someone posts in Slack and says, hey, I finished my thing. And then everyone takes a pot shot at it. And that's not a good feeling.
Right.
You have to get the seasoned engineer's hands equally dirty.
Yes.
Is that where you're going?
Yes. Well, and in the right way, right? Yeah. Because, and it depends on what you're trying to do here. I think most software engineering organizations value developing the skills of their engineers. Not all do, but I think the better ones do. And so like you can use this as an opportunity to teach those junior engineers the things that they don't know that make their dirty hands decisions bad.
Yeah.
And you have to do it in a way where you're not just inflicting your help on them, right? Like you have to give them a goal. You need to tell them that it's like, this is too much for you, right? This is this game on hard mode. Yeah. And if I just left you alone, you wouldn't be able to do it, right? Not well. Like, you're smart. Maybe you're going to figure out how to do it, but it's like, you're going to make a lot of mistakes if we just give you no help. So we're going to give you some help, and we're going to structure it in this way. And the particular way that you structure it depends on the person, the organization, and a lot of other factors that we can go into if we're running out of time, but or if we need to fill time. But the key element here is, if you just overwhelm somebody with a task that is way too hard for them, they're going to compensate for that in ways that are bad for everybody. One of those ways is to make a bunch of dirty hand decisions that the organization is going to be very upset that they made.
Right. And this sort of comes to things that I don't know if we mentioned on the podcast before, but certainly internally at work, you've given presentations where you've talked about the zone of proximal learning. Is that the right term?
Zone of proximal development, yes.
Development, right. Which is, you know, just, it's kind of like the Goldilocks zone of giving something which they couldn't achieve on their own, but with a little bit of help, they can achieve. And that's the best place to be learning. You know, that's the kind of like stretching yourself a little bit without being overwhelmed.
Yeah, exactly.
And it gives me a perfect opportunity to use the word whelm. Neither over nor under, but whelm is right amount of
yes. That's the zone. You want to be whelmed.
Whelmed, absolutely.
Not overwhelmed, not underwhelmed. You want to be whelmed. That's when you're learning.
That's right. So you heard it here first, everyone. So that kind of covers folks who are less experienced, and you know, obviously it requires a certain amount of forethought in order to give them a task which is, you know, stretching, and that you have somebody on tap to be equally dirty handed or in the correct way. That doesn't always happen though. So this is it an example of where, you know, it's particularly and I'm thinking now in more general terms, where folks who are smart and wanted to just get a job done have gone off by themselves and gotten that job done.
Yep.
And then you're stuck with the decisions that they made. And that's another case where dirty hands maybe aren't right. You know, folks have gone, well, pragmatically, we needed a solution to store our files. So I made a directory on the network share and I stored 250,000 files in one directory and it works for me. And you're like, fine, just never type ls in that directory or else your computer's hanging for the rest of the day.
Yeah.
Right. And you're like, well, maybe we can fix this and whatever. And at that point, they're like, well, it works. Why are you bothering me?
Right. Yep. No, that's exactly right. It's not a junior software engineer. It might be like a senior analyst who learned a little bit of Python just so they can automate some parts of their job and then built this thing. And you come along one day and you realize that the operation of the entire company depends on this untested 1,000 line Python script where half the code is commented out.
I mean, you just reminded me actually of like, maybe I have said this before on the podcast, but like, I remember the very first day I interviewed at the finance job that brought me to America. I was speaking with one of the people in their London office and I said, oh, what are you doing? You know, expecting to hear some kind of cool debugging story. So yeah, I'm debugging this spreadsheet.
Mm-hmm. I'm like, right.
What? Oh yeah, the traders have written things using spreadsheets. You're like, oh my life, what am I getting myself into?
yep. That is actually sidebar here. when I'm trying to explain to people that are not programmers why it's so important to reduce complexity in software and why we spend so much time with techniques and tools and just time trying to reduce the complexity of our software because, you know, it's like, oh, we could get some new features out, but we need to, you know, refactor, or we need to delete some stuff, or we need to remove some things. And they're like, why is this so important? Why are we spending our time on this? I'm like, well, imagine that you had a spreadsheet that was responsible for your entire company. And imagine that there was a whole bunch of stuff in it that you didn't understand, but you were tasked to change it. Our code base is, you know, 150,000 lines. Imagine that that spreadsheet was 150,000 lines, and not 150,000 lines of data, 150,000 lines of functions.
Of formulas that refer to other formulas.
That refer to other formulas, that refer to other formulas. That's what we're dealing with.
Yeah.
And so if we don't keep it clean so that people understand how to change it, we'll not be able to change it.
Right.
So the next time you come to us and you say like, yeah, we need to add this thing, I'm going to be like, well, no, I can't. I literally can't. Because every time I change this cell, all these other cells break.
And we don't understand it.
And we don't understand why.
Yeah. That's an interesting way of like thinking about the world.
Yeah. But to your point about, so you have that person that is not a junior engineer eager to learn, right? That wants to be whelmed. it is a person who's just trying to do their other job, which is not software engineering. And they have, you know, found a way to sort of automate some things. You know, they ask ChatGPT a question and they paste the answer into whatever.py. What do you do in that scenario? I think that is absolutely a case where dirty hands are not right.
Right. That's like a canonical example
it's
of like,
just like
you know.
Yep. That interestingly is a facet of another situation in which dirty hands can be wrong. And the hands in question in this case can be someone like us, a very seasoned professional software engineer who's spent a lot of time doing this. And it's when the scenario is flipped, right? Mm-hmm. Imagine that you have, and there's a few different dimensions of this, but imagine that you have the like, you know, interest rate calculation code, right? And you don't really understand the calculation that's going on here, right? And there's some, you know, analyst or an accountant or somebody who is an expert in like pricing this thing, right? Maybe not interest rate calculation, but like a pricing algorithm.
But pricing options is better, complicated that it's like, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just inherently complicated, right? If you go off and you try to build that solution without really involving that other person, you're almost certainly not going to do it right.
Yeah.
Or you're going to design it in a way where maybe it fits the one particular use case that you thought about. But if you want to adapt it or you want to use it for something else,
you're missing the context to be able to generalize it in a meaningful way. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And that has other dimensions too. Like imagine, you know, a security aspect, right? Or like privacy aspect or something like that, where it's like you may be an accomplished software engineer, but if you don't understand like the legal ramifications of whether or not we obfuscate this field or not that field, or like the, you know, international law around cookie storage.
Yeah. Oh,
whatever it might be. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. then you can be a very good software engineer and have dirty hands and be very, very wrong.
That makes a lot. So, really, the dirtiness is a function of a certain amount of responsibility and skill in something. There's a kind of a threshold by which you have to have a certain amount of skill and responsibility to be able to sort of claim the dirty hand mantle, be it as a program, because all the things we talked up until you brought in the sort of analyst or the security expert have been, well, mm-hmm. programmers can have dirty hands, and if they've got enough seniority or experience, then they can be, you're just preventing the bike shedding that could happen when you have like four or five mm-hmm. other smart people who could, and reasonable ways of doing it. You know, your analyst isn't necessarily a good programmer, and so his hands or their hands don't necessarily qualify for the dirtiness in this case. Mm-hmm. But equally, we're not saying this is a unique to programmer thing. This is just like if this isn't your main gig, if you're not expected to be doing this, maybe. Just maybe you don't count in the dirty hand analogy, right? There's a sort of implicit thing that says you need to be vaguely competent and skilled and experienced to have this thing. But that makes me think. So to go back to reading the original thing, because I think there's like, mm-hmm. we've got the inverse of the actual thing is phrased in terms of the inverse of this, right? Right. Mm-hmm. So maybe that, so it's, what does it say? It says
people without dirty hands are wrong. Doing something makes you right.
So, okay, if we just take that first half, that sort of says, if you've got no skin in the game at mm-hmm. all, mm-hmm. then you just can't be right by definition. And I think that's probably, you know, separable in itself. It's like, you know, that stops the peanut gallery. That stops the pot shots from other people coming along saying like, mm-hmm. you know, you don't have any experience. Have you ever written a database before? No.
Right. Yeah.
Then stop telling me how to manage files because I'm doing it right now. Shush.
Yep. Yep.
And then the second part again, sorry, I've got a goldfish memory, aforementioned goldfish.
It's doing something makes you right.
Doing something makes you right. Now that is more contentious.
Yeah, that is the condensed version. The second sentence is the condensed version, which is dirty hands are right. Doing something makes you right.
That's interesting.
But the first part about it, I think you're absolutely right, is that focusing on that first part is probably the more universally true thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is, if you're not involved with something, shut up.
Yeah.
Right? Don't just go and offer your opinion because you feel like you want to offer your opinion, right? If you don't have any skin in the game, if you're not the person who's going to get rewarded if it succeeds or yelled at if it fails, then
maybe it's this unsolicited. I'm interpreting it probably in the best light here, like, you know, unsolicited, because obviously if somebody comes to and says, look, hey, you don't know what I'm doing here, but can I use you as my rubber duck to debug or to bounce ideas off of? Of course, any one of your highly qualified, smart peers might have reasonable opinions about that. And solicited, that would, I think that seems totally reasonable. In fact, almost by being solicited, you are being handed the mantle of dirtiness on some level, right? You know, you're
some dirty gloves that you can put on.
That's right. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So I know we seem somewhat to be torturing the phraseology to fit actual. I think so. So the original thesis of this, of our discussion as we walked to Monk's Pub last night was, when are dirty hands wrong? And I think we've come up with a few examples of that. It's interesting because it's definitely something that we have trotted out over the last few years as being like, you know, hey, let's just stop bike shedding about it. But
I think it's actually a really good way to think about the importance of building software in teams, because, you know, a lot of organizations like to build cross-functional teams, right? Like, you'll have a team that's made up of like two or three software engineers and maybe a trader and maybe an analyst and maybe a risk expert, or you'll have people who are like, oh, we have a product, a UX expert, and we have, you know, a couple of front-end developers, a couple of back-end developers, and a security expert, right? And those kinds of cross-functional teams, like, if you structure them right and you sort of align them right and you're like, hey, you guys are, you're going to build this thing, you're going to build it together, you need to work together, you need to come to consensus on how you're going to do it, then you can kind of solve some of those problems of, like, you know, the one senior engineer by himself isn't going to know the pricing algorithm. But when you put that person in the same team as someone who has that knowledge, and you have a bunch of people working together toward a common goal, then you sort of like collectively have dirty hands, right? And you collectively have ownership of the outcome. And if it's not going to work, then you're all going to suffer. And if it does work, then you all succeed, right?
Yeah.
And I feel like that is a much better model. Now, that, for, you know, sort of organizational staffing, resourcing reasons, that could be difficult to achieve. You know, sometimes those individuals might be very limited in their time or just the number of them that you have, and you can't just like put them on every team and then their goals are divided and it gets weird. So you can't always do it. But when you can do it, I think it solves a lot of the bad things about dirty hands are right, right? Because you get everyone, you get all the capabilities and the skills that you need to solve a problem together and point it in the same direction. And then, as long as people aren't jerks to each other, generally magic will happen.
Generally magic will happen.
Sometimes not, but you can achieve that. Whereas if you have a structure that is more like that SRE structure, where it's like, no, you're not on the same team, right? You get to go home at night and you don't, right? Like that kind of stuff. Then I think that this attitude can be very dysfunctional, right? If you think, well, I'm doing this and I'm right, I don't even know how you do something like that.
No, it's not something that you have direct experience or your many.
I don't understand how you could apply these ideas to that. Like, maybe someone out there has done it. Maybe they'll tell us.
Maybe they'll tweet us. Yeah, who knows?
But I wouldn't purport to be an expert in how to do that.
Well, I think we've pretty much covered the dirtiness of hands. That is, if you've got skin in the game and you have either someone that you can lean on that is part of your team that can help you, or you have the skills yourself, or maybe you are helping someone else, then dirty hands are right holds. right? I think that makes sense. But it is not always the case that just because you're doing a task that gives you a free lunch on the dirty hands of right, mm-hmm. You can't ride on that one. If it's not your area of expertise, or if you're out of your depth doing it, that sort of makes sense. And obviously, if you're preparing food, you should always have clean hands.
Yes.
And especially,
sing the alphabet song while you wash your hands, people.
That's right.
That's how it's supposed to work. That's the most important.
Or hum up theme tune, okay. You know, whatever. That's probably about the same length. I don't know. I don't think we've ever played it from one end to the other. I tend to use the same little snippet that we've got. But, mm-hmm.
Right.
But well, talking of theme tune, given where we are now, I'm imagining it's playing over in the edit, talking to Edit Matt. So I guess on that note, we should call it quits and chat next time.
Sounds good.
You've been listening to Two's Compliment, a programming podcast by Ben Rady and Matt Godbolt. Find the show transcript and notes at www.twoscompliment.org. Contact us on Mastodon. We are at twoscompliment@hackyderm.io. Our theme music is by Inverse Phase. Find out more at inversephase.com.
That's the zone. You want to be whelmed.